you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, this is the Automatically Deleted Husband, and I did take my hike today to go see Mike Day, and unfortunately did not connect with him. I also went to the store to buy some more pins to be able to put photos on the wall, and I got to the store and it was closed. However, and I don't know, the other employees were staying outside, they closed it for whatever reason, I don't know. But then I did go pick up some photos. You know, it's interesting. I have this photo that I picked up it just simply says, come on. You know, and it's kind of like, why would you have a photo like that? Because you can see here, there are two men in the photo. Moments later, they were dead. Why would I have a photo like that? You know, it's strange. And, you know, I have another photo shortly after, about an hour afterwards, the mop-up crew. And you see people, and there's notice, running with child number one. An arrow pointing right here to this gentleman. I wonder who the gentleman is. And then, of course, the irony of that event is this photo here. This is running with child number two, right over here, pointing again to another gentleman. Wait a minute, it's the same gentleman. That's interesting. But you go back a little bit before that event, you'll see that here are a couple men trying to pick up an injured man off the side of the road in order to get him into the van. Picking up an injured man off the side of the road in order to offer him help. There's a story I've read about that. What was it? Oh, yeah. It's called The Good Samaritan. Yeah. And, you know, then there was the thing that really gets to you is this event was called Nice. But, you know, those are some of the photos that I have. But because I didn't have that many pins, and also there's only a certain amount of room on the wall behind me, there's another photo from that particular day that's on the wall right there. This one right here. And the text on it, oh yeah, look at that. Right through the windshield. Ha ha. I find that one of the most disgusting things about that day. The picture here is a picture of the man who was the Good Samaritan, who attempted to act, I would contend, lovingly. You know, I just realize I've said so often that Ethan McCord was the only one who showed love that day. Mr. Tumal also did the same, as well as the gentleman with him. Because they tried to take care of an injured man and paid with their lives for it. But the reason I put that particular photo on the wall is because, you know, again, next to it are the two kids who were in the van. And that moment, that time, however long it was, for those kids to be in that van with bullets flying from way far away, right through the windshield, and injuring them. They both ended up with various surgery to put things back together. One of them, the gentleman, young guy, you know, shows the, we'll call that more than just a scar. And this is obviously from some time later. He was injured. And, of course, the other thing that I've mentioned before is this. Well, that's their fault for bringing their kids into a battle. That's right. That's their fault for setting a role model of being a good Samaritan. And these pictures are now on my photo, on my wall, to be there all the time. Because obviously the gentleman who took those two kids, child number one, child number two in the photo, is this man right here, Ethan McCord. And so now it's a constant reminder. But then, of course, there's this photo here, which is rather blurred, but that's Susanna on the same day. And, you know, I didn't know this until only about, I think it's less than a year ago, that I put this together, that the one photo I have of that era is that day, my date with Susanna. And it really got to me. But so when I do voicemails now, those pictures will be in the background. Obviously not the other ones. There's only so much background you can have. But those four, all these four, this and this and this were all on the same day, July 12th, 2007. This obviously sometime later. But obviously these are the kids in the van. And there's a photo there on the behind them of Mr. Tamal, the Good Samaritan. So that is now a part. Some photos I didn't do. I've mentioned before the Ebenezer that we saw at Benton Falls that somebody had pushed over. And this was the first time I did a repair to it because that cross was thrown to the side and I put it back. And I've done that now twice. But so this is the better of the two pictures. So it's now, it won't be behind me, but it's there. And of course, I do have that photo of the vaxxed bus and the question, should George's name be in that bus? So that'll be on my wall in a different spot because that question remains in my mind. I have mentioned a gentleman that, again, I don't know anything about him, but just the demeanor and the conversation. And that's this gentleman here in Senegal. Because the thing that really got to me, because the bulk of the story wasn't about him, but there was just a few moments with him and his son in his arms. And that content look on the son, really. And his attitude about... because there's a whole lot of people in that area who are trying to get to Europe. He wants to raise his kids where he lives. And I respect him for that. I have another photo that, you know, a day 10 years ago in a few weeks. You know, and it's interesting to think not too many minutes before this, I was in that vehicle. The flames were already started, not quite this far, but they were in that, you know, they were going on while I was, you know, I had to step out the door. The reason the door is open is because I opened it and stepped out. then I just have it because it's not a focus issue, but because of the fact I'm a little bit odd on this. This is the Black Families Matter logo. And, you know, this is not a artwork that I got to have printed. This is my artwork. You know, I generated the whole artwork. And again, it's besides, obviously, it's on kozlowski.org/BFM. It's also on openclipart.org. And so, you know, I've made it public and I got a comment about it. The gentleman said, you know, he was very appreciative of it. But, you know, all the way over here, there's another photo of a guy holding a child. And it is a man that I have the utmost respect for. This man here, I have a lot of his photos. He's in front of a graveyard. You know, a lot of people have, you know, they have a little land, so they do various things with it. He has some land and his graveyards, three of them. And all those graves, he buried people himself. You know, the one line that really got to me. I put my heart and soul into this. I don't know. Obviously, there's a language issue and whatnot, but I really think I could be a good friend with this man because, she's holding her child who could never have been born. And you know, there's a good bit of interaction in the short little video that RT did, and others have done it, but this one is the first. This is the one I saw where I was introduced to him. And that the smile, his face is so much different than mine. But then, to avoid having to bury any more children, the purpose of that line was, instead of just burying kids, he now has over 100 kids. And, the one line that really gets to me, one of the many, because a child is a gift of God. And, he's been doing this for years and years. And, I checked on him. Well, it's been a couple months, but I checked on him. And he's still doing it. So only one of his photos is here. But it's going to be there now. Another one, I don't have him up here, but I've mentioned him. Again, a guy I have a lot of respect for. Oleg Melnikov. He's a small businessman. He literally is. He's a fairly young guy. I think he's now around 30. But he's one of these guys, he's a big guy. One of these guys, when you see him, you say, "Yes, sir." But there's another photo of him I have. Since 2011, Alternativa, that's his organization that he formed, has freed 1,400 people. About a year before I found out about him, I did a couple of videos on slavery. And then I found him. I've actually written him. I didn't get a response, but... And I used one photo in a voicemail when I first described him. And this is the photo. Because he has been attacked. Because obviously, some of the slaves he has freed were enslaved by somebody. And the enslavers go after him. And apparently there has been attempts on his life. And, this is his attacker is still walking free. And I mentioned the comment is, a grammatical error. But, who cares? But those will probably be over there on the wall because I want to have a constant reminder in my mind of other people that I really have respect for and care for, even though I don't think I'll meet them. There's all the things, because one of the things that's happening, from what I understand, Ukraine has... appears to be, my guess is it's kind of worn out in the news. It's not the priority item anymore, but it's obviously is still going on. And because again, you watch RT versus Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera is so anti-Russian, it's ridiculous. So you can see the contrast. Obviously, RT would be pro-Russian considering, and then I go to some third-party reporters. The one I've mentioned many times, Eva Bartlett. There's this Gonzalo Lira, who is in Ukraine. He's a Chilean who lives in Ukraine. A Chilean-American lives in Ukraine. He's a very interesting fellow. But they're there, and they report a little bit differently than what the U.S. media apparently says. Russia's winning this, hands down. And the Donbass, Lugansk and Donetsk, are virtually freed. And because, again, the war is 8 years old, and something like 14,000 people were already dead before the February event started. And they're basically Russian speakers in the Donbass area because the Ukrainian government has been killing them. And apparently what's happened is because now they have to retreat, two things that have occurred. One, you may be aware that we sent these HIMARS to Ukraine to help them fight. And they have been used. Some of them apparently have been already put out of commission, but some have been used, and apparently a number of them were used to attack a prison in the Donbass region that had a whole bunch of Ukrainian, or specifically Azov battalion, prisoners. And so it's not the Russians that have the HIMARS, it's the Ukrainians. And they attacked a POW, prisoner of war, camp with Ukrainians in it and killed about 50 of them. And you think, why would they do that? Because they're telling all. Apparently, the people who are caught become prisoners of war. The common thing is, my country has abandoned me. And, you know, there's no will to fight. And so one of the things they have to do is they have to silence these people. So they kill them. They kill their own people. But there's also a whole bunch of shelling going on. Into the cities in the Donbass region. No military targets. They're just shelling it. The Ukrainians are shelling it. It seems to be revenge. And one of the reports that I mentioned before, because the interaction with the gentleman who gave what I would suggest was a remarkable, and I would suggest consistent with a follower of Christ, response. The reporter, Russian reporter, asked him, will you ever be able to forgive them? And there was a pause in his response. And a moment later, you know, he had turned away and whatnot. His response, God will forgive them. And I found that fascinating. And, you know, that's why, because I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever. This guy is an actual Christian. My guess, you know, it's just, there's a lot of Christian community within Ukraine, all over Ukraine. But there's a Christian community and they're Christian, you know, followers of Christ. And I think he probably is. Just because, you know, I watched his reaction. I want to hate them, but in obedience to Christ, I will trust that God will forgive them. And I think what he was saying is, right now, I can't. That's, you know, because I can appreciate that. To be able to say God will forgive them is a remarkable character achievement, I think, a grace of God within that man. So, those are the photos that aren't on the wall. And then, of course, again, Susanna. And then the, so, you know, three of these four are from the day of collateral murder. There's Phuc Thong up here. But there's a few others. One right here. And in this case, what I did is not use the picture of Daniel Hale himself, but the with the overlay I did for the video I did for him just over a year ago, August 1st, on his birthday. That I didn't know about at the time. This is the All Hail the Whistleblower. And again, of all these people, well, you know, obviously my family would be first, but of all these other people, you know, Ethan McCord and, well, the Tamal family, perhaps even Phuc Thong, but Daniel Hale is the one person I would like to meet face to face. I've actually written him a letter and stated that. I said that in the video, and I've written him a letter to state that. I have a lot of respect for him. I wonder if we have a personality match. I wonder if we have a personality mismatch. I don't know. But I'm willing to find out. But then, the most famous photo of them all, this one here, because it's one of the great moments we've had in hiking. As this is Chris, my friend Chris Prince, standing in front of a tree with a sign on it. He's going, huh? And, you know, because it's you know, Buzzard Point that way. It's kind of like, where is it? the expression was beautiful. I really appreciated that. And I take great joy in that photo. Next to it is a photo of Chris and myself standing at the sign near Big Frog on the trail up there. I think that was our second time up to the top. It could have been our third, I don't remember. But the thing is, Chris took a picture of me and I took a picture of Chris, and then I didn't use Photoshop, I used GIMP, and put them together. Photoshop's expensive. I used to own a copy. I probably, you know, own an old copy, but GIMP is free, so that's what I use now. But then there's the other photo here of Buzzard Point with my little arrow saying we stood there, because it's remarkable. It's, and you know, again, at this top of this cliff, I did jumping jacks. But the last photo, this one here. This is a young lady wearing a black shirt saying evolution. And this is a young man wearing a yellowish-orange shirt saying creation. This was the video done by Genesis Apologetics and the roles they played. John and Jane. And, you know, I watched the video. It was done superbly. And then when you add the John and Jane to it, boy, did they get to my heart. Because this John loves a Jane, a Dorothy Jane. You know, this one right here. Very much so, to this day. But the thing that amplifies that is they did this wonderful interaction that I've described many times. And shortly after this, you know, near the end, she takes that shirt, because it was obviously split in the back, and just grabs it and pulls it off. And under it, she has the creation shirt. It was somebody who said, no, I'm going to abandon. I mean, she's playing the role model of somebody who will abandon the evolution stance and embrace creation. The thing that gets to me about that is there's a other lady that I would pray would abandon the hate that she's shown me and embrace obedience to Christ and live the commitment she made to live her days with me as one flesh. I did get a postcard this morning. As I was walking out, it was from yesterday. It came from that lady. Return to sender. It's, you know, bottom one, bottom right. She's offering absolutely no help. No hope whatsoever. She has found a different path. And unambiguously, it's not obedience to Christ. You know, again, the low-hanging fruit, the Romans 7. A wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives. I'm alive. The 1 Corinthians 6:11. A wife should not separate from her husband. If she does, she should seek reconciliation. Seek to be reconciled, however it's translated. She and I are one flesh. I can tell, because we have a stack of kids. They look like her, and they look like me. They're our kids. You know, if you go take the obvious here, that doesn't look like my kid. That looks like his kid. Makes sense, doesn't it? That looks like my kid. That looks like my kid. So does that. So does that. So do those. So do those. So forth. They look like my kids. And they look like my wife's kids. Because they are. Because we're one flesh. Because I committed my life to her. She committed her life to me. one of the things that caused tension is because, and I was completely unaware of what was going on. I've made a whole lot of blunders because as a young man, the lust of the eyes, especially, lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, pride of life. But the lust of the eyes, in the sense I wanted things. I wanted the things of this world. Very much so. It was very much a part of me. And it didn't leave all at once. And, you know, to be honest, it's not completely gone. But it's a whole lot less now. Again, somebody offers me a car, not interested. I don't want one. You know, I did a 5-mile hike today. It's kind of like, yeah, nothing. I'd rather do that than get behind the wheel of a car. But when I had those desires much stronger in me, I misused a lot of things in the sense that, well, the way I describe it is I had an excellent income, you know, rather substantial income. And I lived a life as if it was going to continue. That was one of my biggest mistakes. I was very wrong in doing that. I got into a lot of debt, and I didn't need to. I could have been debt-free and stayed that way. So when trials came, I wouldn't have had to go through the difficulties I did. One of the recoveries of some of those difficulties was to, instead of Heritage Systems, my company that was making the big bucks, I ended up working for others. Some in Alabama, the short time at Microsoft in Washington State, the more back in Alabama, some here in Chattanooga, a company in Nashville. So I did those things. And in most of those cases, it was anywhere from $40 to $68 an hour, which is a good income even today. but I didn't handle it right still. And two things were wrong. One, I lived as if it was so easy to do this. And that was wrong. That was very wrong. But the other thing is, why did I keep getting in trouble? Why did these opportunities end? You know, some cases it was, you know, for example, when I worked for Remington Arms in Madison, North Carolina. I worked there for 6 months. And at 6 months it ended. Because the federal government says, you know, if you're a contractor, you can't go beyond 6 months without being a full-time employee. So I got to 6 months, and that was the end of it. My government protected me, like they protect me from raw milk, but I've got it again anyway. Anyway, but so, I mean, some of those I lost for those reasons. Some of them I lost because, well, again, the same near the same area in Greensboro, North Carolina, when I worked for Volvo with a, whatever, 2-3 month contract, and I did it in a couple of weeks because I couldn't steal. And then there's the, you know, so many others, including the cases where I was literally the whistleblower. Because, you know, I remember the conversation with a recruiter, another Christian gentleman, who said to me directly, if your employer wants you to work slowly, and then work slowly. It's, if your employer wants you to steal, you know, it's the dishonest manager in Luke 16. It really is. Because one manager is going to, you know, going to effectively, you know, the next person down and saying, we're going to cheat. We're going to steal. So we want you to be a part of this. And I'm sorry, I can't. I couldn't articulate it well then, but My family knows how many times I had jobs and I hated them. It's not because I hated the work. It was because the environment was, let's not do a good job. Take your time. Be slow. And especially when it's, you know, well, the obvious example of wasting taxpayer dollars. I couldn't understand why that was happening. And of course, the reason for these four photos here, because that is the big example, the West Star example. Because the character of the people that were involved in this, again, the leadership at the church I was at, were either directly or associated with the people who trained the pilots who did this stuff. Oh yeah, look at that, right through the windshield, ha ha. That attitude. I saw a similar attitude in many conversations I had with the people there. And I would suggest the reason why no one asked me why I was fired is because they're part of a collective. And that collective protects the collective. I've made blunder after blunder because I was trying to do the right thing. And when the people you're around who are followers of Christ won't challenge you on if you're doing the wrong thing or encourage you when you're doing the wrong thing, there's a problem. One of the dialogues I've had several times with my friend Chris, because the advantage, one of the things about my relationship with Chris Prince, he and I both ran for office. He ran for state office, and I ran for national office. But we both did the same thing. And we both today will say, what we did was not that we didn't have the right charisma, we didn't have the right funding, we didn't have the right this, that, or the other. No, we were wrong in what we did. What we did was in disobedience to Christ. And neither of us were challenged. You know, of course, you know, obviously we agree. And I have a few people that I dialogue with that do agree. Most don't. Some will engage me. Most won't. You know, it was interesting. It's maybe even 2 years ago now. My friend Daniel New, you know, the dad of Michael New from, you know, the 1990s, the guy who did not put on a UN uniform because he signed up for the U.S. military, not the UN military. And, you know, had his 15 minutes of fame. But we met, obviously, in a political event in Pittsburgh, I think it was, at the U.S. Taxpayer Party convention. He was representing Texas, and I was representing North Carolina. So we met, we became friends, and we've had, you know, I continue to contact with him, even within the last couple days. But a couple years ago, he got me connected to a gentleman who was doing a conference call because they were politically active and being, you know, conservative and whatnot. And Daniel invited me. He said, you got to come to this because you might be able to ask some questions. And so I got onto the conference call, heard the opening address, the opening prayer, and so forth. And then the floor was opened. And I chimed in. And I'd ask about, you do prayers and so forth. Is this in obedience to Christ? They didn't want to hear from me. It didn't go over well. And I haven't been invited back. I did have a dialogue with one of the gentlemen who was on the call later. And we ended up not agreeing. But, you know, if you make a case that you're following Christ, then you should be able to say, I'm following Christ because Christ has told me to do this. And most of the arguments that I get are really pathetic. Some are actually pretty good. Some are, you know, again, probably, well, one of the longest running has been with my friend who is the Latter-day Saint, the Mormon. We disagree on foundation, and I would suggest some of his arguments, especially when he uses the, I've been pointing out some of the, what I would suggest are inconsistencies between the Bible and, in the most recent case, the Pearl of Great Price. Because in the book of Abraham and the book of Moses, in the Pearl of Great Price, there seems to be contradictions. So that's one of the things that's currently in a dialogue. It's an active dialogue. We usually write each other about once a week. And so that is one of the subjects of the dialogue. But he's willing to engage me. And it's not, you idiot, because you don't see it my way. It's this is what I'm seeing. It seems inconsistent. Please defend your position. And I will contend the reason it's inconsistent is because the book Pearl of the Great Price, as with the Doctrines and Covenants and the Book of Mormon, is not consistent with the Bible because it's a false doctrine. But we're good friends. Anyway, photos are there. And I hope it to be a constant reminder. Obviously, collateral murder is a big part. John and Jane is a big deal. Phuc Thong is a big deal. Again, I came to Christ because of the pro-life activity. That's how Christ got me. And this man lives out as a pro-life activist better than anyone I know. Then there's the joy of having a friend to hike to Benton Falls or Buzzard Point, and you know, to have that picture, to see how high we are up is remarkable. And then one of the greatest joys I have is to hike Big Frog Mountain with Chris, and we've done it again 3 times. And then, of course, a man that I really have a respect for and a love for, Daniel Hale. I want him there as a focus in my future videos. I am looking at taking all these pictures and putting, because one of the things I continue to work on is with photos and videos and so forth, or even audio or even text, you read something, you study something, and then you move on. It's like you read a subject in the scripture and it's kind of great. Okay, I've studied this, and you set it aside, and then 6 months, years later, it's kind of like, where was I on that? How does it relate? How, you know, I want to have the tools so you can, you know, it's one, I want to make the tools so you can search through this, find related things better than just simply cross-references. But also, I want to put the tools in so you can put in not just notes, but the way you link together the way you found it. In other words, I may have come to a particular understanding of something by going from here to here to here. And the way I got there kind of helps it sink in my mind. So if I have some way to make kind of a note, a way that I can say, all right, I remember I was looking at this and this brought me to that. I want to be able to be easily reminded I'm here. And I remember now from 3 years ago that I went to there. I want to give those tools to people because I want people to be able to say, I want to struggle to know my Creator. And if I can hand him a tool, not a commentary, but a tool, you know, it's the next step of, great, you got a Bible in your hand. It's now translated into your language. Now let's make it that much more useful. Not by giving commentaries. Dictionaries are helpful. Commentaries, I'm afraid, will leave you to a particular doctrine. We have no teacher but the Lord. That's a line I say a lot. Anyway. So it's not to give somebody a doctrine. Doctrine questions are typically something you engage people one-on-one or small groups with content. But the tools, because then it's not me. Because I'm not the reference. You may have heard me say that one too. Anyway, so photos are there. They're big deals. That's my girl. That's my Susanna. That's Mr. Tamal's girl, about the same age. The interesting thing is, Mr. Tamal hasn't seen his girl now in 15 years. I haven't seen my girl in 10. Mr. Tamal will never be able to see his girl face to face in this life, because he's dead. Will I be able to ever see my Susanna again? By the way, I'm alive. John and Jane. Dorothy Jane, rip off that black shirt and show that you're a follower of Christ. Reconcile with your husband. Live the commitment you made. Live in obedience to Christ. You're the one that says Jesus is the Redeemer. He is of his elect. Show that you are by obeying him. It's the 1 John. If you don't obey him, you're a liar. His word's not mine. I want you to repent. Because I love you. Whatever I can do to take anything to make it easier, whatever, I will do. Obviously, by putting the pictures on the wall, by putting these cards that you have returned to me on the wall, that puts pressure on you. If I have to take all those things, stick them in a pile and burn them in order to reconcile with you, no question I'll do that. But I'm not going to lie to you to reconcile with you. I'm not going to twist the scripture like your dad does, unambiguously, in order to get a particular position across. I'm not going to turn to somebody who uses the Talmud. I'm not going to run to the state, to the Davidson County Sheriff, to get the Cleveland police to come to my door, like Chris Bitterman does. I will talk with you. I will talk with anyone. We disagree? Fine. I'm willing to engage you. Again, I went today to, as I described him yesterday, visit my favorite drug dealer. Favorite felon. You know, I remember, because I've picked him up from prison. I've driven him, an hour and a half away in his vehicle, because he had a suspended license a couple times, in order to appear in court, and sat with him in court. Because he paid me well? No, actually he did buy me lunch, but that was it. But he's a human being created in the image of God. We have a relationship. He's a friend. there's an opportunity to love a friend, to do something for a friend, bend over backwards. Mr. Cross, you have an opportunity to reconcile a family. Will you bend over backwards or twist, as in twist the scripture, to avoid it? Your grandkids are at stake. Church leadership, will you protect your institution and destroy families because you feel threatened, especially at this stage when I make the case that the Bible is true and the institutional church is a fraud? Now you have more reason to avoid me, don't you? Remember, I'm not going to stop. Until the Lord stops me, I'm not going to stop. I put the pictures on the wall, and yes, they're noticeably bigger. It's a constant reminder. I'm in this. I'm not going to turn away. Because, number one, that lady is way too important to me. I committed my life to her. And I'm not going to stop. Because I love her. And I want her back.